I've now started recording.
Excellent.
I've explained briefly to Katie how this may or may not work based on the fact that we normally do with a microphone.
Yeah.
And she's sitting here with her arms folded and her legs crossed looking very grumpy. So who knows how it will go.
Excellent. So what are we talking about, David?
Should we explain what we're doing, Robert?
Excellent idea.
Okay. Years ago, Rob and I started having conversations with each other about being in HE.
Oh.
Yeah. And most of those are about teaching and learning things. So we've had discussions about, so in reverse order, because that's probably freshest in my mind, we've spoken about writing in the first person, using that as assessments. So that was the last 20-minute podcast. Before then, we've talked about working with students who are in work, obviously, because both of us are interested in apprenticeships. And we're just kind of carrying on that. We had a bit of a break for a year and a bit, and we're now in season two of a very, very widely listened to. Katie, don't smirk like that. I think we've got two loyal listeners, I think, Rob, last time we counted.
Is that you and Rob?
Yeah, it is now. It's slightly more than that. Bizarrely, it's slightly more than that. I think mainly because I've forgotten her name. Was using it for the PG cert people.
You've forgotten the name of all of our listeners, David.
Yes, I have. Yeah, it's quite hard when it's only goes over one hand. I forget. And we thought this time round it'd be useful for us to have a conversation about quality matters stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hence we thought we'd invite you along. You had an opportunity to say no, but now you're here. It's too late.
Yes.
Has that made any sense whatsoever?
That does. That makes a lot of sense. And if you let me have a link, then I can push it out to my list.
Oh, we don't want other people to listen to it. that would be completely against the whole point of things. That would be great. We aim for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. So okay. Hopefully it's not a hour-long interrogation.
Okay.
Mm. Rob, do you want to start or shall I?
Yeah, I don't mind starting. I don't know if you're aware of this, Katie, but I come from a background of working in quite highly regulated sort of industries, like in healthcare and those regulated by the MHRA, Medicines Healthcare Regulatory Authority, and the National Physics Laboratory and things. So I've always been interested in quality systems, and my work has been affected by them. So I guess that's the sort of context of my interest, and how do these things work in higher education, places that are involved in people and sort of quite sort of dynamic, really. So that's my sort of focus of interest. What about you, David?
Well, as someone who is just feeling perpetually battered to do with regulation and compliance in apprenticeship education, that's my point of interest, because that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Well, I can probably offer, I hope, a third way on all of that. I think obviously we're working within a more regulated previously, just with the switch from the Higher Education Funding Council to the regime of the Office for Students, where their framework is set in legislation more so than it ever was under the Funding Council. So there has been a shift that's an actual shift, as well as a kind of perceptive shift about quality and standards in higher education. But I think that has opened a door. I've never been a particular fan of compliance-led approaches to quality assurance. I would much rather that the academic quality and standards service was working in a more pedagogical partnership type approach with academic staff, so that we can get to where we want to be, but in a way that enables us to work towards transforming student outcomes and supporting the ongoing enhancement of the teaching profession, so that we're supporting academic staff in what they want to do rather than kind of imposing rules and regulations that don't always make sense. So avoiding that situation where the tail is wagging the dog. Obviously, that is a bit different with apprenticeships, because we're not just working with the OFS, we are working to the funding rules of the Education and Skills Funding Agency. We're having to work with particular professional statutory regulatory bodies for some of the apprenticeships. So for the CMDA, for example, we've got an external endpoint assessment organisation that we have to work with. And of course, Ofsted, and Ofsted have a very different approach to anyone else that we might work with. So Ofsted is very much about the quality of training, whereas it's not perhaps as focused on something like academic standards, which are obviously very important to the university itself in terms of managing those. I probably waffled quite enough there.
I mean, culturally, there's a real dissonance between all of those, and I find it really difficult to navigate. So Ofsted requirements and ethos. I mean, you did a training session for us the other day on progress reviews, which was really good. And I did some progress reviews for the first part of the apprenticeship program on the senior leaders last week. And I found that training really helpful. But that sort of getting into the mindset of those different regulators and those different sort of standard setters, that's really difficult and quite, I find it quite confusing.
I'm pleased I'm not the only one, Rob, because I find it really confusing. And the language I find really difficult. And you just used the word training, because that's how Ofsted kind of focus themselves. And I noticed that we've actually put on our kind of course promotion banner training as part of the headline. And I don't think any other degree program we have has got anything in its headline banner that is about training. And I find that language really, really interesting, that shift.
Although I think teacher training has always been teacher training.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we talk about teacher education as well, but it's also teacher training. I suppose it comes back to, this could get into a very deeply philosophical discussion around the purpose of a university.
Well, yeah. I suppose it always will end up somewhere like that, doesn't it? But in terms of that idea of training generally, did anyone else use the word, apart from teacher training, which is really good observation to make, is there anyone else who's used training for anything you've been assessed or evaluated on?
No, I think it's always been more about the split between the very vocational, if you think back to the polytechnics, which were originally designed to be about vocational education, versus something very academic. So perhaps social work is a vocational subject, social policy is a more theoretical academic subject.
Mm.
But now I can't off the top of my head think about, other than teacher training, any other academic area that would talk about training.
Do the nursing guys? I just wonder whether the nursing folks do.
Good question, don't know.
Mm.
What do you feel about this notion of training, particularly with the senior leaders, Rob? Is that...
I see it as a little bit sort of a bit of an alien concept, really, in the sense that with the senior leaders, you clearly have got the knowledge, skills and behaviours, but in many respects, this is about sort of quite deep education, really. It's about those bigger questions of who we are in the world, why we are in the world, and how we can make a difference to those people around us. And I think those are sort of the quite fundamental questions. And that's the sort of feedback I get from people being on the programmes that have been the sort of biggest impact on them. It's not how to do a pivot table in Excel. I mean, that's, to my mind, that's training. But in terms of education and development, it's being able to see the world in a new, fresh way that gives us agency and confidence.
But I do think that's another advantage of the OFS versus, say, funding council in that it's not about someone telling us what a process is, it's telling us where we need to be.
Yes.
So the journey is of our making, our design.
Yeah. In actual fact, I think you're spot on. I was talking to somebody last week who wanted to transfer their senior leaders program from another university to Chichester. And that was because of the way that we go about it. You know, we get to the same outcome, but they were really attracted to the distinctive different way of that journey at Chichester compared to this place that she was coming from.
And I think that's what I mean about pedagogical partnership, in that I wouldn't want to be in a position of having to tell my academic colleagues how to do things. I'm not an academic. I have a very different skill set. I think I'm there to help academic staff get to where they need to be. And part of that is translating some of the complexity around the requirements of the SFA, Ofsted, OFS, professional statutory regulatory bodies, yeah, in the least painful way possible, if only for my own sanity.
Yeah, and I totally get that. And I guess there's two things. Number one, you know, it is a bewildering sort of context you just sort of outlined there, that it does take navigation. And however careful you as a pilot are in being able to sort of support us with that, I actually think that I don't think we spend as much time as we should thinking about the sort of pedagogical philosophy of the programs that we develop. This might sound a bit controversial, but one of the things that this person I was mentioning just a little bit wanted to come over to us was that where they're currently studying, there is a sort of a cut and shut approach to program design, where they seem to get lots of different modules under a banner, stick them together, and put it as an overall label on it as a degree course. Now, clearly, that's another university, but I do think that actually we need to spend more time on those pedagogical, philosophical questions, and sometimes sort of see beyond the sort of the hazards of the navigating the terrain that you've outlined. That's a very long answer to quite a short question, really.
But I think this is all part of the pivot that I'm trying to work on with the Academic Quality and Standards Service, though the team that I have the pleasure and privilege of working with at the university directly. In a couple of the team have done the what was the AUA is now AHEP, the Association of Higher Education Professionals, PGCER in Higher Education Administration and Management. A couple of them have gone through the process of AFHEA with Advanced HE, and one of them's looking at SFHEA. And I think by having that combination of understanding how universities should work and do work, combined with the more pedagogical approaches that they'll pick up through doing things like AFHEA, rather than sitting in an approval event and just saying, oh, well, you've got some assessment tasks, that's absolutely fine, tick, job done, away we go, that they start to ask those questions about why have you got that particular assessment strategy? Had you thought about, for example, more authentic approaches to assessment to support employability, so that we can get into some of that detail, some of the philosophy underpinning the pedagogy without it becoming a tick box exercise?
Yeah, and I think that's really valuable. And I think that's where it is of real value to the students and the apprentices. Not that they would articulate it like that, but that's the thing that has the biggest impact. What do you think, David?
I was kind of reflecting as you were talking, Rob, and as you were talking, Katie, about that meeting last week, and rather like Rob, really, really helpful to have the update, particularly in terms of, you know, your comment a minute ago about translating what Ofsted, which, you know, I really hope you appreciate that we're not sitting here thinking let's have a kind of go at something, have a kind of kicking around the car park because we think it's rubbish. You know, I came to the end of that session and I think one of our colleagues said, have you got any questions, David? And I said, no, fundamentally because I can't imagine any other quality team I've ever worked with being as pragmatic and helpful as you guys are here. So that's not our or my perspective, certainly. But that idea of translation, I think, is really interesting. And I suppose, how can we help that translation? How can we help your colleagues who are going on the training activities to get even more involved in things from a pedagogic point of view? I suppose that's the thing that occurs to me immediately.
I'm not sure. I think...
I thought you were going to say, I'm not sure they'd want to. The immediate response is...
No, I think they would. I mean, I must have sat in several hundred approval and review activities of one description or another, and they're all completely different. And I think one advantage to having a quality team that are professional services rather than academic backgrounds means that we have no subject loyalty. So we wouldn't particularly promote, say, the approach of engineering over the approach of business, over the approach of nursing or whatever it happens to be. To us, they're all the same but all different. So just because engineering does something in a particular way doesn't mean the business school should, doesn't mean nursing should, doesn't mean social work should. And all those differences, I think, are what makes the job fun, really. But obviously, sometimes there are things that you see and you think, actually, that's really good practice. And that might work somewhere else. It might not, because you've got to take account of expertise of staffing, sizes of student groups, how much work is involved in something. I think one of the, going back to Rob's point about making that space to think about kind of pedagogical underpinnings, is that when people are setting up a new programme and they're thinking of maybe 10, 15, 20 students, they come up with a fantastic assessment strategy. And then, of course, by the time they've got 80 or 100 students, it's like, oh, actually, this is quite a lot of work in terms of such a large group. We're going to have to do a minor change and rethink our approach to assessment. So I think the more I know and the more the team knows about different subject areas and their specific context, the more we can help. And so that really is a case of running through approvals, reviews and other activities, so that, as I say, the more they know, the more they can help, the better informed we are, the better we can inform our academic colleagues.
I've got a question about so you outlined out the sort of the landscape and the changing landscape with the Office for Students and various other things. How do you sort of understand the sort of reconcile the increasing sort of regulatory framework with innovation? Because to me, it would seem a bit contradictory, really. The more regulation, the less innovation. Or is that too simplistic?
I don't know, maybe I'm more glass half full than half empty, in that I think because the OFS are focused on outcomes rather than process, that gives me in particular much more latitude in thinking about how we might do things. So one of the things I'm interested in at the moment is optionality in assessment. So I seem to be on the little working group looking at the access and participation plan for the university, which has got to be in with the OFS in July. And we need to think about how we better support students from particular groups. So yeah. How do we improve attainment between different groups of students, say white males from economically disadvantaged backgrounds don't do as well as males from other backgrounds or females from any background. So, like I say, optionality in assessment so that people can play to their strengths. But then I need to find academic staff that are kind of willing to work on that with me. So somebody who will pilot that idea about optionality in assessment. And then in 12 months' time, we can look and see whether it has made a difference in terms of student attainment, student progression, and so on and so forth. So, and I think because previous regimes were looking at process and partly outcome, I don't know that I would have felt as empowered or enabled to kind of go, actually, let's look at a different way of doing this.
Gosh, I feel I've got a sudden sense of being quite encouraged and quite positive then. I don't know if you're half
Whoops, I'm sorry about that. I'll go back to utter misery in a minute.
No. And so that, I would be
Rob's now three quarters full by the
I'd be a great I'm a great fan of that, and I'd be more than happy to help out. And And in the ethics module, I do perhaps rather cheekily give students quite a lot of flexibility in how they put their words together. So, and it's also something that's importantly creative, and it brings their entire selves to their assignments as well, isn't it?
It sounds like, and I might have misinterpreted all of this, but with the OSF side of things, that focus on outcomes seems to be putting us in a completely different place to how we might be reacting to Ofsted.
Yes. I mean, Ofsted do look at outcomes because they have the Apprenticeship Accountability Framework, but that's quite a different set of measures to the B3 outcomes that the Office for Students uses on continuation, progression, completion. Ofsted, within the Apprenticeship Accountability Framework, are looking at things like number of students that have gone over a particular number of days and have not completed their EPA, for example, which is really very specific. And Ofsted obviously have quite a structured framework around the things that lead into the judgments they make on things like personal development, leadership and management and what have you. But I do think with OFS, like I say, we have a lot more latitude. I mean, it's a bit like if I said I'd like a bowl of macaroni cheese and didn't give you a recipe, you could head off and put all sorts, you know, onions, tomatoes, bacon, you could any kind of cheese, not necessarily cheddar, hopefully some pasta, but you know, you could go all out and not make it with pasta at all, although it might need a different name other than macaroni cheese. But we're not being told how to get from A to B. That really is for us. And I do think we have a certain amount of latitude with Ofsted as well, but perhaps less so than with OFS.
I suppose in a way, sorry to Rob to drag this back to apprenticeship stuff, but I suppose with the apprenticeship standards, that is in a way the constraining factor in some ways, because it is about those knowledges, skills and behaviours, tick, 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 tick. So it might well be slightly disingenuous of me to say it is Ofsted's fault. That's quite an easy target, isn't it, Ofsted, in many ways. But actually, maybe the question should be directed at those responsible for writing the standard as much as anything, in terms of creating a very narrow funnel for us to work within.
Which primarily is the employers putting the standards together with IFATE. So are they talking to the right employers, enough employers? I mean, if you look at something like QAA's subject benchmark statements, they ask for academic representatives from the sector to sit on a group, and they'll try and have, I mean, it seems utterly bizarre now to be talking about post 92 and pre 92 universities, given how long ago 1992 was. But anyway, they do make sure that they have a good selection from all of the UK nations, from different kinds of university, etc., etc. And then those benchmark statements go through a very thorough consultation process. And I'm not quite sure how IFATE works, whether it's a self-selecting group of employers, whether they check that it's balanced in terms of SMEs versus very large employers and so on and so forth. But maybe there is something there for IFATE in terms of how they actually go about having employers put together a standard.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. My sense is from the Trailblazer group that put together particularly the CMDA, that one reading of it was that it was slightly strangely balanced. There was quite a lot of emphasis in a particular area, and sorry to go into the detail, Rob, but for example, they were, bearing in mind it's a relatively small group, they felt it really important to have a representative from One Stop and also NYSA, the convenience store chain. And it just struck me as being quite weird in a relatively small group to have two representatives of what broadly are very similar types of business. Nothing wrong with a convenience shop, but why did it end up being something that was worth two seats around the table? Shrugging my shoulders at that, but I don't know who put together the senior leaders standard, Rob. Do you remember?
No, but what I do find with them, they are oddly specific in some parts and quite broad in others. So I do find them quite sort of oddly worded, whereas the revised subject benchmark statements for master's programs in leadership and management have been put together really well. There's that sort of consistent sort of flexibility and structure. I just think that's been done really well, whereas the apprenticeship standard has been a bit sort of oddly specific in some parts and quite broad in others. But then again, I suppose that might be a reflection of, I don't know, processes there and whatever. I don't know. What do you think, Katie?
I don't know. It does sound as though perhaps there's a learning point for IFATE in terms of how they convene groups to look at the standards, because I think with the Trailblazers, they were self-selecting. It was people saying, we need a standard for how to make macaroni cheese, for example, and then the relevant, you know, sort of pasta makers and what have you coming together. But going forward, when those are renewed, I actually have no idea how the standards are renewed, who feeds into that.
No, I don't either. I think the CMDA has had this is under review on its banner for about 2 years now, I think, on IFATE's website. But what that means, who knows?
Yeah, something to investigate.
I think, Rob, on your very positive comment about the current benchmark statements being very helpful, I think I wasn't a direct quote, but I think you implied it was helpful.
Yeah.
Is it worth us drawing this conversation to a bit of a close, or is there anything else that anyone wants to say in terms of Go Quality?
That's end on a high.
Well, Casey, thank you very much for enduring this.
Thank you for inviting me.
Which ended up being 25 minutes or so of chat. But that's really what we were trying to do, to be honest. So hopefully that was worth 25 minutes of your time.
No, food for thought, sticking with my macaroni cheese theme.
Would you come back for a second one at some point in the future?
I would.
Right, got that contract. That's on the recording, real quick, type it up. Well, thank you very much.